Welcome to Magic in the Moment, mindfulness in real time. My name is Clayton Platt, and I'll be your host for this podcast journey. Now, for many people, practicing mindfulness has very little to do with sitting on a cushion, lighting incense, or even focusing on their breath. Just paying attention to what they're doing at any moment and doing this intentionally can create that same magic. And our time together is intended to share how mindfulness plays out in everyday life for our guests. My guest in this first episode is Leah Clark, an author, speaker, leadership consultant, and dear friend. Leah discusses her approach to mindfulness, which involves finding micro moments throughout the day to pause, breathe, and refocus. This episode is sponsored by Meditation for Leadership, bringing the power of mindfulness to leaders and teams. Clear thinking, stronger connections, and better decision-making can start with just a few moments of mindfulness meditation. Meditation for Leadership offers live, interactive training programs that blend neuroscience and practical techniques to build resilience, emotional intelligence, and focus, so you can lead with confidence and clarity. Experience the difference mindful leadership makes. Visit meditationforleadership.org to learn more. We often find ourselves in situations where we're preparing for something that's really important to us. It could be a big meeting, conversation with someone that we need to make a point with, or in some cases, presenting a webinar to potentially hundreds of people. And our ability to get ourselves in that space where we can absolutely be present and do our best is important. But sometimes we'll take the opportunity to try to practice. And practicing something that you're presenting without an audience can be sort of empty. So my guest today was in a situation where she was a little stressed out, and she had a very important webinar that she was leading and felt the need to do some practice, and there wasn't a ready audience available except her son, who just happened to be in kindergarten at the time. And she did the logical thing that a mom would do and say, "Hey, can I practice this with you?" And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, she had him go into another room so she could actually do this as a virtual presentation. And Leah, welcome. And would you finish that story for us?
I would love to. Thanks for having me, Clayton. Yeah, big smile on my face as I think about the story in retrospect. Not such a big smile in the moment. So a little bit of extra context. Everything you said was absolutely true. And ultimately, it worked out really well. But if I go back to how the situation started, I didn't have a ready audience because it was COVID. And so like many, we were all in lockdown mode, and we had our little pods, our families that we were staying with. And I had a big presentation to do. And usually I would practice with my colleagues, with the people around me, and work through some of the kinks of the webinar, the presentation. And all of a sudden I realized, well, where are the people? I need the people who are going to give me feedback and I'm going to practice with. And a little bit went into that freak out mode of, this isn't going to work. How am I going to get through the kinks? How am I going to really ready myself for this? And at some point when I was in freak out mode, I stopped. A little bit of mindfulness here. I would say a little bit of my mindfulness moment, and just took a breath, sort of looked around me and thought, well, I may not have the people I usually have, but I have this person in front of me, this five-year-old who has a brain and has a heart and is one of the smartest, kindest people I know, even at 5 years old. And so I said, you know what? You can be my audience. You can be my audience, Colin, and let's do this. And he was willing. He was game. So he did. He went in another room, and I popped up the WebEx, and I delivered some or all of my presentation to him. I don't know if the content was registering with him, but I just needed to know that there was somebody else on the other end of the video camera. And it was great. I probably felt better and more confident knowing that I had this loving, incredible individual on the other side of the screen. And at the end, I asked him what it was about. Somehow, I don't remember exactly how he had a piece of paper, and he handed me something and it said, show your strengths because you can be a leader. And leader is spelled like LDR or something like that. Don't judge me for the kindergarten spelling. I was responsible for it during COVID, so that's on me. But my my aha was, you know, to again, take that moment, even in the midst of what seems like a really kooky, bizarre situation that's causing you to freak out. And again, just taking that pause, being present, allowed me to say, I might not have everything the way I think I wanted it, but I have what I need. And I can use what I need to give me the confidence or the practice or whatever it was that I needed in that moment. And just quick punchline or editorial comment on it. I ultimately brought him into the end of the presentation. So I had a picture of him and I took a photo of the, you can show your strengths because you can be a leader. And I popped it up on the screen and, you know, people just loved it, loved the, I think the vulnerability and wrapping it up with the wisdom of a 5-year-old. So that's my story. And I'd say it made a lasting impression on me because here we are a couple of years later and I'm still telling that story.
Well, I love that story. And for a number of different reasons, I love it as a parent. I love it as a facilitator. And I love it as a proponent, a teacher, an evangelist for mindfulness. Because this podcast, Magic in the Moment, Mindfulness in Real Time, is really intended to bring out examples just like that. Mm-hmm. Leah, you and I have talked about the fact that you value mindfulness. It's something, in fact, professionally, you've supported the work that I've been doing, and I really appreciate that. There's a sort of a natural inclination for you to lean into it. But you've mentioned that, you know, you don't have a quote unquote regular practice, but you have a deep appreciation. And I'd love to kind of touch into that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it doesn't come naturally to me. It's not easy for me to be in the moment, to carve out the time to meditate and to have a regular practice. I'm super busy. I know a lot of us are. If I'm not running in one direction with my teenager, I'm running in the other direction with my now 10-year-old. Work is busy. Life is busy. And so I think I fall into what is probably a very common trap or story that we tell ourselves, that I don't have the time for this, and this is not a good use of my time, and I'm just too busy and too important to meditate or to have a mindfulness practice. And I don't believe that at all, and yet I recognize how hard it is to carve out specific time. So my approach, because I do believe that there is value and that it's good for me, that it's good for my relationships, for the work that I do, my approach is a lot more of how can I find those moments when I know I'm maybe triggered with anxiety or, you know, this busyness that's going on, this distraction or distractions in my life, and just catch myself, take a pause, take a beat, take a deep breath. Sometimes I will do it a little bit more formally, right? What I mean by that is move away from my desk, close my eyes, deep breath, or I might do a yoga pose that gives me, you know, some sense of strength if I'm moving into an activity that is going to require that. So it's those micro moments where I catch myself over the course of a busy day, and I just stop and try and refocus my breathing and my thoughts on what's next for me. And that works. That works as much for me as carving out a 10-minute Peloton meditation early on in the day or at the end of the day. It's more powerful for me given where I am, I would say in my journey of practicing meditation and mindfulness, what works for me right now is just identifying those micro moments and using them to recenter, catch myself, take a deep breath, and then set an intention for whatever the next thing is that's coming up in the half hour, hour, hour and a half that's immediately in front of me.
Yeah.
And sorry, let me let you jump in because I feel like you wanted to ask me something.
Well, no, I was just, honestly, I was just going to reinforce that's magic in the moment. And the fact that there is a metacognition for you, there's an awareness of, oh, this is what I need at this point. My mind's all over the place. Well, noticing that your mind is all over the place is 80% of the battle. And that's one of the things I want to reinforce here is that it's getting on the journey and it's noticing what we notice on the path. And it's not what's the nature of the path, right? For some people, right? For some people, this is a very spiritual thing, and that's a beautiful thing. For others, it is a tool to do their jobs better and to be a better partner and parent, etc. And so I just wanted to reinforce that, Leah. And I also want to give you the opportunity, because when we were talking before, I was really impressed and moved by some of the reasons why you want to take that moment professionally. I want you to dig into that if you could.
So you and I, not surprisingly, are aligned. I'm glad you asked me that, because that's what I was starting to think about as I was, you know, chatting just a minute ago about finding those moments and catching myself, particularly because I want to show up for others in a way that gives them what they deserve of my time and my attention. So, for example, there are a lot of different things that I might do over the course of a day. I might be writing, might be presenting a webinar, I might be talking to a client. And, you know, the way our schedules are, it's like I've got a 9 to 10 and a 10 to an 11 and an 11 to 12, move from thing to thing to thing. And if I have a coaching client, let's say at 11 o'clock, and I'm moving right from my 9 o'clock to my 10 o'clock to my coaching client, and I, you know, breeze into that Zoom room for that coaching client, and I'm still sort of popping with the other meetings and responsibilities that I have, I know I am not going to show up for that client in a way that is focused on them and centered on them and putting their agenda first and tuning in to what's happening with them right when we pop on the Zoom, body language and energy and tone. So I will, especially when I have a coaching client, I will take that moment to, again, center, sort of calm myself down, think about the session that I'm going into, and think about the person on the other end of the call. Because I believe, especially when you're coaching, one of the most magical things about coaching and the part of it that I think is hopefully a gift that all of us as coaches can give to our clients is that undivided attention, that opportunity to feel like somebody is focusing on me, what I'm saying, my thoughts, my feelings, my needs, right? That's a gift that I think we give our coachees as coaches. And if I can't stop for a moment and make that transition, I can't be there for that client in the way that I want to. I can't put their agenda first because I'm still operating on my other agendas. So I hope I'm not being too obtuse when I describe it, but really, I think the core of it is why it's so important to me is I want to be there for the other person in the way they're expecting me to be, in the way that they deserve. And I can't do that unless I take that moment. And for me, it's about putting them center, right? It's about really focusing on them. And I would say with my kids too, and Clayton, you and I have talked about this. I feel the same way about my children. And I work and have worked for years in a hybrid situation so that I could, let's say, pick my kids up from school. The problem is, it's not in the picking them up from school, right? It's not in the physical act of getting my car in the pickup line and logistically being there and putting the backpacks in the car. If I'm not also tuning into them in that moment and really listening to them and really asking them a question about how their day was, so being mindful in that moment, I might as well not, you know, sort of pick them up. I'm not going to leave them at school. That's a whole other level of trauma. But my point is, it's really about, again, focusing on that coaching client, focusing on my children. And when I can focus on the other person, that's when it really sparks the drive in me to be mindful and to be present, because those individuals are important to me.
I just want to take a moment because, first of all, I love that reference that you mentioned about, and we talked about this before, and I'm so glad you brought it back up, that sense of like, if I'm not all there when I'm picking up my kids, I should basically have someone else do it, because the message that your kids get is, well, I've got half a mom, right? And when you told me that story before, I'm going to try not to get emotional about this because it touches me deeply. I was going back mentally to when I lived in Stamford, Connecticut, and the kids were very young, and my wife was working full time, and she tells me stories about stuff with the kids, and I go, really? Now, this was before I started my meditation practice, and again, we don't need to have a meditation practice to be mindful, because my wife didn't. My wife was like a Leah, right? But she had this gift as an incredibly energetic working mother with three kids to be in that moment with them. And here's part of the beauty of this. And I'm sure that stylistically for you, this has become evident. When you take the time, whether it's with a client or whether it's with your family, to actually be fully present and then process what's going on, right? And sometimes we talk about this as like, process it, be there, savor it, and then tell someone about it. From a neuroscience standpoint, you're building very deep neural pathways. And I think that's, for me, looking at you professionally, that just underscores the power of Leah, is that when you are in a coaching situation, you've made that intention. And that's something, again, that I work on personally, and maybe it's because I need to do it more from a regular habit foundation. So to do some stuff where I'm setting intentions. This is what I want to be doing, right? And you're manifesting that, right? You, before that coaching meeting, whatever you've needed to do, whether it's being quiet, taking a moment, striking a yoga pose, whatever it could be, you've done what you need to say, now I'm here for this. And here's the other thing that I heard, and I'd love you to sort of take this and run with it. So you have focused on what is it that they need, right? And it's, what do they need and what's my role in filling that need?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And if you don't mind,
I've done it all.
I want to say to those who are going to be listening to this and hearing the exchange that I'm not here to say, I don't want to sound soapboxy or sanctimonious or any of that, because I don't get it right a lot of the time, right? So, you know, there are days where I'm screeching into the pickup lot, you know, like barely making the bell. AirPods in on a call, you know, and those are not my best moments. And though, and sometimes they just have to happen, right? So if you're a parent or a human being listening to this, you know, I think we also have to give ourselves some grace and say, it's not going to be every single day. It's not going to be every client, right? There are clients who, I'm going to be honest with you, I might be like answering an email quickly before, you know, we're starting our session. So I don't show up this way perfectly with every client and with every interaction with my children. However, if we can keep in mind that it's a practice, right? There's a reason why it's called a practice. And I can at least commit to trying to get a little bit better at this each and every day, each and every week, each and every pickup, each and every client interaction, then I can say to myself, job well done, right? Not job well done because I nail it every time. You know, I'm like I said, I'm lucky sometimes if I remember the backpack and the lunchbox and the permission slip and who I'm talking to at 11 o'clock, you know, on my calendar. But if I can commit to the practice and commit to trying to get a little bit better each and every day, I think that's what people can hope for and expect of me, and I can expect of myself.
Yeah. And again, just to go back to our conversation before, so yeah, I've been meditating for 20 plus years, and what my wife Pam would say is, yep, a little less of a jerk. And the beauty is, yes, I am a little less of a jerk, and I'm aware of those times when I've been a jerk, right? So just to again kind of look at what you described, which is human, and I love that, because this pursuit of mindfulness and being more aware is not pursuit of perfection. That doesn't exist, right? As you said, and it's really about noticing when we've screwed up a little bit and saying, okay, and as you said, being kind to yourself, saying, okay, so welcome to the human race, Clayton. It's like the toothpaste is out of the tube, but maybe at that moment, the toothpaste is out of the tube. I can't put the toothpaste back in, but I can laugh. I have to share this story with you as a facilitator the actual circumstance makes this even more ironic. I serve as a what's called a Stephen leader at my church. And so I was trained to, first of all, be someone who spends an hour a week with someone in need and just to be there, just not to cure them, but just to be a presence and let them know that, you know, the universe cares about them. Great, good for me. And then being who I am, I was like, very interested. I got trained to be a leader in our congregation about this. So now I'm in a situation where I'm training other people around this process. And there was a moment when I was training and there was a particular topic being discussed. And one of the trainees said, no, I don't think so. That's not how I would do it. And my reaction was, as a pure professional trainer, well, no, that actually is the way it's supposed to be done. And if you don't do it, you're wrong. I said that, and then I took two beats, and I looked at the class, and I went, well, that was a little embarrassing. I said, that was not a great teaching moment. Everybody laughed, yeah. And after the class, a couple people came up and said, but we got them by, we got the point. But the vulnerability in that moment to be able to acknowledge that I screwed up was, yeah, it was important. And
that was probably the most memorable part of the class, would be my guess.
Oh, it was. Unfortunately.
But the lesson in that, right? To also take from the fact that, you know, you didn't intend for that to happen. And you can use that as a teachable moment around humility, right? And awareness. And so, you know, it may not have been what you intended to have come out of your mouth, but maybe it was supposed to happen, yeah. So that you could have that that moment to catch yourself and to teach something that maybe you didn't intend to, but certainly there was a message there in, you know, relative to humility and vulnerability. And so, so I say the toothpaste came out for a very good reason.
There we go. And that's honestly being able to reframe that moment. And that's a powerful mm-hmm. thing. And I think, again, I've heard you reference, perhaps not in those exact words, but in leadership situations, being able to take a difficult situation and to be able to process through it in a way that as a leader models the behavior that you want your reports, you know, your team, your organization to embrace. But as a leader, being able to model that and take a difficult situation. Again, I appreciate your approach to this. And, you know, that's something I'm doing day in and day out. And from a training standpoint, trying to reinforce that. But I really admire your ability to weave those concepts in, perhaps sotto voce, right? Because we're coming at it from different angles. But I really appreciate that.
I've spent some time talking about the coaching component and, you know, certainly how mindfulness comes into my life as a mom. You know, what I would say is when I do work with leaders around leadership development, so that's another part of what I do, you know, let's say a leader's on a learning journey and they're learning about delegation or communication or accountability, any of those fancy skills that they need. The starting point for me when I think about leadership development is self-awareness. So I will always suggest starting leadership development with emotional intelligence, you know, growth mindset. And I think that there is a strong, and the reason why is because I think we have to do the work here, even when we're talking about leadership development, before we can do the skill stuff, right? Before we can do the stuff with our hands or use our voice in some way. And so for me, yes, in coaching, yes, in my life as a mom and in leadership development, I think the starting point for leaders is always self-awareness, right? And doing some reflection on who am I? How am I showing up with others? What's going on in my mindset or my attitude? And in order to do that, in order to be aware of, you know, your emotional intelligence skills and to reflect on whether or not you have a growth mindset or not, you need to be mindful, right? You need to take a pause. You need to turn inward. You need to self-reflect. And so even though when we talk about leadership development, we don't always use the words mindfulness or meditation. And I applaud the work that you do to try and make that a little bit more obvious and raise it to the light. But even if it's not stated the way that you do, it's in there, right? It's in the emotional intelligence. It's in the growth mindset because, again, it all starts, in my mind, leadership development should always start with self-awareness and introspection. And you need mindfulness and meditation where you can bring it in order to support that that self-awareness, that turning inward, that reflection. So we've talked about it with coaching. We've talked about it, you know, in sort of how it shows up for me as a mom. And, you know, as a leadership development professional, I think it is the starting point for any really meaningful leadership development journey.
Yeah, I think that aspect of self-awareness is also sometimes it is the perfect place to start. It's really the only place to start to make this really an effective process, but it does require some vulnerability. It requires that introspection. I often refer to it as like, you know, taking a trip up into the attic and it's like, you're not really sure you want to see what's in the attic, right? But we need to know, right? And once we're there, knowledge is power. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people, and again, I think seasoned leaders misunderstand, is that being willing to pull the curtain away, look at the guy behind, you know, the man behind the curtain, the person behind the curtain. Being willing to do that is sometimes scary and takes a fairly large level of vulnerability to do it. But the answers are there. The answers and the questions, right? The journey starts there, and to be able to see where the gaps are. And again, one would assume that if someone is on this learning journey, that they've bought into what the process is.
When I look, though, at some of the issues that are confronting all generations right now, including, you know, Gen Zs and millennials, and we say, like, oh, well, they're not struggling. I think a lot of people right now are struggling with issues related to stress and burnout and mental health. And what I really appreciate is that now more than ever, there is a willingness to talk about those issues openly, right? And so I do think that younger generations are struggling, maybe struggling in a different way, struggling with anxiety and mental health issues. And they're also willing to name that and to address it in a way that I think previous generations didn't. And the connection I want to make here to what we're talking about, mindfulness and awareness, is, a need to be able to recognize and sometimes sit with and process uncomfortable emotions. I think that's something that all generations and younger generations need to continue to work on if we are going to get better in terms of our mental health and our anxiety. And I know this might not have been where you expected us to go, but it's sort of prompting some thoughts that I think are in an important way connected to this topic. One of the metaphors that I've seen recently related to this that I think is incredibly useful is this idea that our emotions, particularly our negative or difficult emotions, are like a ball float, like a beach ball floating on the top of the water. And if we try to not become mindful, ignore them, push them away, right? It's like pushing that beach ball under the surface. First of all, it takes all of our energy to keep it there, to keep it away and to keep it underneath, which means we can't be focused on the other things in our lives. So we're pushing these emotions down and trying to keep them away. And inevitably, at some point, you're probably going to let go, not dealing with them appropriately. And it's going to pop to the surface and burst out in some negative way, right? An outburst of some sort. So when I think about what mindfulness and meditation can do for us relative to those emotions is to allow us to be aware of them, right? I notice these emotions, particularly these negative ones. I notice the beach ball there, but I'm just going to let it float around me, right? I'm not going to do anything to push it away or push it under because I know that that's not really going to benefit me. But if I just notice it, I'm aware, I'm mindful, right? Back to the topic that we're talking about, then it can just sort of float around me until maybe inevitably it floats away. And I am still present in what I'm doing. I'm still able to, you know, function and deal with whatever's happening in my life without distraction. And so, so I just think that this conversation is particularly relevant regardless of generation, because we're all in some way, shape, or form dealing with different forms of stress and anxiety. And like I said, mental health. And so the connection I make, Clayton, is, you know, mindfulness so that we can function better in the world in which we live and deal with the struggles, regardless of what generation we might be a part of.
So I first of all, love the image of the beach ball. And I want to circle back to that. But also, I totally endorse your thinking around each generation has had, you know, the prior generation poo-pooing them for the struggles that they don't have. And in fact, the generation, sort of my kids, lived through 9/11. They lived through the Great Recession, which was the most serious financial collapse since the Great Depression. They lived through COVID. So what I did take away from it was the sense of very little good comes without struggle. And it's if you want to go into a Buddhist principle, it's the two sides of the coin. It's the yin and the yang. It's like joy and pain. It's like you don't get one without the other. And so, but you have, I think, described this in really, to me, accurate and very thoughtful ways. It's like they're dealing with things different and they're naming it, right?
It can be really hard to grow, right? It's hard to, if the wind is, you know, sort of always at your back and things always go your way, you know, inevitably at some point it's not going to go your way. And do you have the capabilities, the faculties that you need to deal with that struggle or those challenges? So I appreciate the comment because I think that that's very real. And honestly, that's kind of life, right? I can't imagine there's anybody who's walking around in this world who hasn't at some point confronted some sort of challenge or struggle. And it is in how we, I don't want to say persevere, because when I say persevere, it makes it seem like, oh, well, tough, you know, stiff upper lip, just push through whatever it is. Kind of back to the comment I was making a moment ago, I think we're much more evolved than that now in our thinking. And so I will connect back to what I was saying about awareness of difficult emotions and challenges. I think the way we deal with them now is very, very different, which is to notice what's going on, to name it, to acknowledge it, and then to work through it, whatever, I hate using air quotes and I just did it, but to work through it, whatever through it looks like for you. And that might be imperfect, and that might be that you get knocked down by it a couple of times before you move forward. But, you know, the point is that you keep going. You know, you look for ways of coping. And this is the part that I want to say, you also ask for help, you know, and I think that's a big difference in how our thinking has evolved, right? That stiff upper lip, I'm going to have adversity and I just have to be strong and push through it. Now we're saying, yes, there's adversity. You're going to have to confront it. And it's okay to say, I'm struggling. I need help. I need support from others. So again, probably taking this in a direction you didn't intend, but you know, for me, I do think that you learn from challenges. I think you do grow. And I think more than ever, it's okay to say, as I persevere through whatever this struggle is, I'm going to call upon, you know, the people around me and name it when I need help and I need support. Sorry, I didn't mean for this to become a mental health infomercial, but I do feel strongly that this is something that's different and good about the way, you know, we today are more often processing some of the challenges in our lives. So yes, I do think self-care for yourself is not selfish, because if you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be able to take care of others or be there for others. So I think it's an and also proposition. You know, self-care, however you define that, and also care for others. And what's really interesting about this self-care or care of others concept as it relates to leadership, so I want to connect it back to where I live and breathe every day, which is in the leadership space. What I appreciate about how that concept has evolved, especially in the past year, year and a half, is for a while, I would say during the COVID-ish years, self-care was, you know, make sure you're taking rest and putting up guardrails around work and life. And maybe self-care was like, hey, let's throw everybody in the office a pizza party, right? It was these other things that we were doing. And not that those things aren't good. Now I'm noticing a shift in the leadership space as it relates to mental health and care of others that is about recognizing the contributions of the individuals on your team. So this idea of care for others is metamorphosizing from sleep and stretching and guardrails around work life. And now we're saying that's not enough. If you, leader, are going to take care of the people on your team, if you're going to be aware of what they need, you need to tune into acknowledging the value of their contributions and letting them know that they are important. And for me, that's a really important evolution in the leadership space when we talk about what can I do as a leader to help the burnout and the stress and the anxiety of my people. Now, that's not the only thing. There are so many other things that you can do as a leader relative to sort of helping address some of the anxiety and the mental wellness issues of your people. But one of the more dramatic ahas for me recently in a lot of the studying that I've been doing is that that care of other is very much about valuing their contributions and who they are more so than sort of the trappings of, you know, a pizza party or, you know, go take a stretch break kind of thing.
Again, just hitting a point that is so relevant and resonates with me so deeply, that sense of, and this is now taking, going beyond self-awareness, now this is awareness, right? Awareness of others and the perspective of their roles and that connection that we have relationally. But being able to very specifically name and reinforce the value that people do. And again, from it, when we weave our neuroscience into this, the more specific we can be about, you know, let me just say, it's not an attaboy, attagirl. It's, you know, Leah, you show up every day and your ability to be present for the people that you're meeting with, to zero in on what it is they need from you in that moment, to be able to follow up consistently, to be on time, to be reliable, to be a constant presence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those specific details do two things, right? On the one hand, you can't name these specific things if you haven't been in the room, right? Like in Hamilton, being the room where it happens. If you're not in the room where it happens, if you're not present, you don't notice those things. Okay, so noticing them and then absorbing them. And this is where, again, smarter people and more competent people than I do journaling and write things down, whatever it is. And someone said this, is you can't be distracted if you have a pencil in your hand and you're writing. You're taking it in, right? So if you're mentally doing it or physically doing it and then sharing it with that person.
Yes.
And that's where the difference, right?
Yeah. And to come full circle, you can't do that if you're not mindful, if you're not present, right? Whether it's if you're not present in that moment, you can't notice with the kind of precision that that person will value, right? So being present as a leader, being mindful as a leader, seeing that person, noticing it, you know, and committing it to memory or somewhere in here, and then to sharing it back with them, that's magical, right? That's really magical. And so, yes, you know, self-care, absolutely, and care of others in a way that really transcends some of the trappings that we've talked about. There I go again. Some of the trappings that we've talked about in the past couple of years and taking it to a different level as a leader and as a human being. And so anyway, this means you need to go back to your wife and notice specifically what she's done you and appreciate the value of it. So I just gave you homework, which I'm a coach, so I can do that.
Homework. And by the way, it's something that was probably fresh in my mind because I did that last night, but I don't do it enough. And by the way, it's like, again, just while we're on this and taking it to that personal level and the family level, I have next to my bed on my bedside table, a Father's Day card that my middle child gave me, I think 10 years ago. and it's so specific. And when I need to be reinforced, when I'm feeling weak, when I'm feeling less competent, when I'm feeling like, you know, I'm married to Superwoman, right? And it's okay. It's like, I can acknowledge that. And yet she will look at me and say, but you know what? Don't discount the stuff that you're doing, right? And this gets back to that self-awareness, like, okay, give yourself some credit. And we need to do that. We need to take a moment and say, when have I made a difference? Because if we do that, we're setting ourselves up to look for other times to do that, and we're growing into the better self, right? And that's a wonderful path to be on. So I can laugh about it, and I can, you know, and again, I would say that woman that I'm married to for years, I can't meditate because my mind's all over the place. I'm too busy. And then all of a sudden, I think it was during acupuncture, she realized, oh, wait a minute. If I'm noticing my mind being all over the place, that's a magical thing. So now before she goes into a squash match or something, and just saying these little moments, I can do it. I don't have to do it every day like Clayton, right? Because he needs it more. but we can find whatever it is. And again, the Leah Clark method, it's like right now, it's for whatever reason, it's working for you to an extent that is suitable. And you know, if you could change something, maybe you would, right? But you have that awareness of like, I understand this concept and I value it when I see it in others, when I see it in myself. And in that way, it's like, that's a huge part of our path.
Big, big part of it. And it doesn't, you know, it can be a formal practice. And I'd like to say, you know, I would like to expand my formal practice, as I know a lot of us would probably like to. And bringing in those micro moments throughout the day as a professional, as a partner, as a parent, you can start to do that. Like I said, you're on the path, right? It's a pebble maybe on the path, maybe not. It's not a rock, but that you're jumping from, you know, spot to spot, but it's at least a little piece of something. And like I said, if I can at least try each day to bring in more of those pebbles, more of those micro moments, then to me, that's a good day.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for the time that we've spent today, Leah. I've enjoyed the heck out of it. And I also want to say
that it flew by. It absolutely flew.
It flew by. I also want to say this. The people with whom you interact, both personally and professionally, are blessed because you have a great outlook. You're living into this. I particularly appreciate that approach that you're bringing to your coaching and the leadership development. I love our ability to interact together. That's great. But even doing it in the way that you do, which is real and maybe subtly bringing in these aspects that you and I have talked about, but you value it and you model it. And I appreciate all of that in making our world just a little better.
Yeah, well, you just made my day with that. So thank you, Clayton. And I appreciate being able to be here with you today.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I want to take a moment to thank my producer, Marianne Sanders, as well as my friends at Meditation for Leadership in helping launch this podcast. Future guests will include international speaker and brain-savvy catalyst, Sonia Pemberton, renowned sports psychologist, Mitch Green, as well as author, storyteller extraordinaire, Ara Tucker. Until next time, this is Clayton Platt, encouraging you to look for those moments of magic in your life where mindfulness plays out in real time.